These are the voyages of Spaceship Earth and the human species that lives upon it. Our continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one, least of all ourselves, has gone before. Are we seeking out new worlds, you may ask? Well, the strange new world, it's right here. We have barely left this planet, unlike the people in Star Trek, but we have changed it. We have created new civilizations. And now we're wondering, can we create yet another civilization better suited to the planet on which it forms? Well, I'm not going to add a lot of biographical information to what Sarah had shared about JLA, except that that's how everybody knew him, James Luther Adams, during his life and now since. As she said, he was born in 1901 and became a Unitarian minister. He is also a theologian and professor of theology at three liberal theological schools, Harvard, Andover, Newton, and Meadville-Lombard. He wrote his voluminous works in the form of essays and lectures, one-time kind of talks, not in a book. So it is later editors who have compiled his thinking into whole volumes. So the words of our reading were written in various forms in the late 1930s and 1940s. The Five Smooth Stones, I can explain to you. There, JLA was picking up on a biblical image, the five smooth stones that a young shepherd, David, chose as he went to face the huge warrior, Goliath. And so JLA articulated five smooth stones of religious liberalism, the five tenets of a free faith as he saw them. And over the next 2 months, I'll speak about each one in a service. What I notice about it is that implicitly it's a metaphor of struggle, even of violence. What enemy are these stones to bring down? We can imagine for ourselves some of the things that he did not spell out. What enemies might be vanquished by this first smooth stone? The conviction that revelation continues to unfold, that we and our knowledge continue to grow and change. Enemies such as ignorance, superstition and wishful thinking, short-sightedness, baseless pride, arrogance, and apathy. Now he says that this is foundational for a free faith. It's interesting that word free, and we'll talk a lot more about freedom when we talk about his second smooth stone next week, but I'm noticing the fact that sometimes realizing or being informed by others or by reality that we don't have it all figured out and may never do so, is far from freeing, quite alarming to us. We may deny it and act as if we do have things much more figured out than we actually do. And the consequences for this insistence can be dire. We may feel troubled by the vast realms of the unknown, especially since maybe not in regards to quantum mechanics, but in regards to psychology, economics, politics, we have to make decisions daily based on our conditional, incomplete, and very frequently incorrect information. But JLA asserts, and I, being a good religious liberal, think that he is right, that we are freer accepting that these realms of the unknown are there than pretending that they are not. And then there's that word faith, that he's saying this tenet of accepting that revelation continues is central also to being religious, at least our kind of religion. Faith is a word that can be hard for religious liberals to swallow. you know, belief in things unseen. I don't want to believe in things unseen. You have to show me. We're all from Missouri. Is that a really old reference? Never mind. But I think that word faith, when you think of its opposites, leaves room for mystery, for the as yet unknown. There's faith versus certainty, which closes us off to possibility. There's faith versus knowledge, knowledge being very fine as well as it goes, but always, as Sarah demonstrated with her long list, incomplete. The thing about this principle of continuous revelation is it's very tempting to think mostly of others when we assert it. Those believers in tired, old faiths, faiths that we perhaps have left. But if it applies to them, if it applies to anyone, it does equally to us. Our kindred in the United Church of Christ have owned this beautifully with their slogan, "God is still speaking." They follow it with a comma. Interesting thing to end a slogan with. And in that, they are following the teaching of the great sage Gracie Allen, who said, "Never put a period where God has put a comma." Here we are on this comma. All of us, each of us, our institutions and ourselves as individuals, wherever we are now, things keep moving. The reality is rumbling underneath like a changing earth. It's not settled. So when we feel settled, we are deceived. Satisfaction, especially smug satisfaction, is the opposite and the opponent of a free faith. Sometimes we talk about the journey to truth being up a mountain. And if that is so, then when we get to the top, we discover another mountain. Mountains beyond mountains. So we may climb to the truth that we've been looking for and rest there a while at what we thought was the peak. But we know now that it is only a plateau. And having rested, as one does at plateaus, we go on to the next leg of our journey, which never ends either for us as individuals, nor for humans, nor for any being we can imagine. I didn't realize that this rather untheological couple of sentences were in this essay until after I planned it and realized it was the same week as the Sunday before the global climate strike. It's a couple of sentences that in our current context are sobering, a bit terrifying, but possibly, I'm a religious liberal, also a source of hope. He writes, "How long the order of nature will continue to support human life is beyond the ken of our science. Possibly our Earth and our Sun will one day cool off and freeze, or they may dissipate or explode." As I say, I don't know exactly when this was written, whether it was in 1939 or 1946 makes quite a difference, does it not, in how he might have thought about our ability to continue living on this planet and its order of nature. But it's so interesting that the example he gives is maybe the Earth and the Sun will cool off or explode. Seems rather quaint to worry about such far-off disasters, does it not, here in 2019. So the fact that the world has changed so much in one lifetime, that we live under a threat looming over us daily, is sobering. On the other hand, it loomed over him as well. He just didn't know. It was as yet beyond the ken of our science for people to widely understand how close the Earth was to being not unable to support life, but unable to be inhabited comfortably, certainly by human beings. He didn't know, we didn't know, as a species. And where I take my hope is that the world has changed that much in one lifetime. Surely it can change again. You know, space, outer space and inner space, of the interior of atoms, they hold many mysteries, but they hold no mystery more profound than the mystery of human nature. We have so much to learn, so much to discover about ourselves. When Sarah said modeling the first time, I thought she said model at UN. I thought, oh yeah, those are some big problems to figure out. Real world problems that nobody else has solved yet. Maybe this new generation will figure out some things we haven't yet. Cynicism is tempting, but it's unwarranted. Humans do not have to be what we have been of late. We can rally, we can change. That is what this principle suggests to us. And so by example, to help take us to that place and to see some of the possibilities and difficulties of changing, of having revelation unfold beneath our feet, I'd like to have a little time of private memory here. So if you would, take a moment to think of a moment when you learned something you had never known before. It might be small, it might be large, it could be in school or while reading or talking with a friend or thinking, praying, being completely alone. Some moment when you said, oh, now I know something I did not know a minute ago. And see if you can go to that moment now. And if you thought of one quickly, try to think of a second one. How did it feel when revelation unfolded? Were you excited? Was it satisfying? Was it frightening? What was happening in your mind? What was happening around you? Did others share this shift? Did they know what was shifting inside you? What is it that makes a way where there was no way? A creative power, as James Luther Adams said. Some call it God. He suggests, if God is not an evocative word for you, try that in which we have confidence. We can have confidence that whatever we call it, something works through us, through our senses, through our neurons, but is not us. It's not us. Because after it's had its way with us, after its transformation, we are different than we were before. Maybe it was what John Newton was talking about when he cried out, "Amazing grace! How sweet the sound!" I thought of that as moral transformation, which is a lovely thought. But really, it's any moment when everything looks different. And you realize, I thought I saw before, but I didn't. Now I see in a new way. So we've had lots of moments like that. And something that we know from them is that more are coming, if we let them. The question is whether we'll build a castle here on our plateau and declare it a peak and say we're done learning, changing, growing. We're happy with ourselves the way we are. We know all that's important for us to know because look at how ignorant we used to be. Things are good now. We could do that, or will we pitch a tent and then pack it up again in a day or two, or a month or two, or a year or two? Some moments of change and revelation take a long, long time to assimilate. Will we pack up our tent and keep on moving? Because the mountains are still out there. A new civilization waits to be found within us, made by us. And we need a civilization that does not subdue nature, but accepts that it is part of it. A civilization that is not built on the cynicism of greed, but expects that we will share enough, that there is enough for everybody, without destroying one another or the many beings with whom we humans share this planet. And of course, that will not steal from the future. Which brings us around to the global climate strike planned for this Friday and for a whole week of activity, Friday to Friday. This youth-led movement has declared in calm but insistent tones that we are in a struggle for our very lives. What are we struggling against? Ignorance, superstition and wishful thinking, short-sightedness, baseless pride and arrogance, apathy. I would like to leave us with a blessing on this movement and all here who are participating in it. So I'd like to begin by asking you if you are planning to leave work or school to strike on Friday in solidarity with the global climate strike. Will you rise, or if you're more comfortable, raise a hand? Also, if you have you're supporting a child or member of your family in doing so. Yeah, stand on up if you can. If that's not comfortable, just raise your hand. Can you stay that way? If maybe you're a lucky person like me who doesn't have to leave work and plans to just be there in support, raise your hand or rise. If you are doing something else during that week of action, the 20th through the 27th, to take action against the global climate crisis, will you please rise or raise your hand? That's something planned for the 20th or 27th. And if you just planned it in the last 30 seconds, that's cool too. I didn't know for sure that I was taking off and taking a whole bunch of middle schoolers to the San Francisco event until my daughter said, yes, I'll take school off on Friday. That was this morning. If you are financially or otherwise supporting the global environmental movement, please rise or raise your hand. Maybe there's some other way I haven't thought of. Go right ahead, please. I want to offer all of us who are here to offer a blessing to all of you, to all of the strikers and activists and supporters who are leading the way, who are saying a new revelation has come and we must follow its imperative. We are being told by scientists, by our own observations, by the earth, that things have changed in a lifetime. We are now aware of something we did not know. And so we need this blessing. And so if you're seated and you're saying by that you're not supporting this movement, you're wrong, because you are about to offer a blessing to everybody who is striking or otherwise taking action. This is a prayer I wrote and have given here before, a prayer for a drop in the bucket. Blessed are the droplets, for they shall fill the bucket to overflowing. Blessed are they who know there is a bucket, for they shall be filled with hope. Blessed are they who can see beyond their lifetimes, for they shall travel in faith that their work will not be in vain. Blessed are we when we know we only appear so small because what we are creating is so big. Blessed are we who are part of one another. Blessed are we when we give new life and light to others, for we will live more richly ourselves. Thank you for bearing this blessing to everyone, wherever you may be gathering, San Jose, Palo Alto, San Francisco, this week. Blessed be.